Our next speakers will give us a look at the world of soil physics. And so we have Frank Casey and Mary Beth Kirkham. Click the left mouse button there and it'll advance your slides.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank you, Eric. I'm Mary Beth Kirkham at Kansas State University, and the title is Soil Physics, 1936-2011, and a Look Ahead. My father, Don Kirkham, was a professor of soil physics at Iowa State University, and in 1961, he gave a talk in St. Louis before Division I of the Soil Science Society of America on the occasion of its 25th anniversary. And his talk was published in the Soil Science Society of America Proceedings in 1961, and here is a sheet of his, the cover sheet of his talk. He reviewed research done between 1936 and 1961, and he did his review by state. He cited work done in two foreign countries, England and the Netherlands. On the occasion of the 50th anniversary in New Orleans in 1986, I know of no paper that was published summarizing soil physics research. However, I remember John Letty and Walter Gardner gave talks on soil physics history, and on the right side of the slide is the cover of the brochure that was handed out on the 50th anniversary. So research done since 1961 in soil physics is too vast to review, and I reviewed, limited my review to the last 6 years. I surveyed the papers done in the Soil Science Society of America Journal in Division S1, and it goes from July-August 2005 issue through the May-June 2011 issue, 36 issues. There were 299 papers published in these 36 issues, and my survey is as follows: number of authors per paper, number of single-authored papers, number of women authors, countries from which the papers came, states from which the papers came, topics covered, and sources of funding. The number of authors per paper: there were 1,035 authors for the 299 papers, and some authors were duplicates. And so the number of authors divided by the number of papers gives us an average of 3.5 authors per paper. The number of single-authored papers: my father felt it was important to have his own research as well as that done with his students. He said single-authored papers were important for tenure decisions as well as determining membership on the graduate faculty. Results: of the 299 papers, 18 were solely authored, 6% of the papers. Again, some of these authors were the same person. Some authors have published several solely authored papers. Let's look at women authors. It's difficult to identify women authors, but to the best of my estimate, of the 299 papers, 42 had women as co-authors for 14% of the papers. Again, some were the same person. Now let's look at the countries from which the papers came. The survey was based on the country of the corresponding author. 186 of the 299 papers came from outside the USA for 62% of the total. 29 countries are represented, a lot more than the two that my father talked about in 1961. Countries with 8 or more papers: the most came from China with 27 papers, Germany 24, Canada 17, Israel 16, Japan 11, Belgium 10, Australia 8, and there were 22 other countries that had less than 8 papers each, and nine countries had only one paper. Now let's look at the states from which the papers came, and first let's look at the non-university laboratories. The USDA laboratories had 33 papers, and the Pacific and Northwest and Oak Ridge laboratories had 6 papers for a total of 39 papers. University laboratories, there were 35 labs that had 74 papers for a total of 113 papers that came from the USA. Now let's look at the university laboratories. The most came from Iowa State University with 7 papers, Utah State 5, University of California Davis 4, University of California Riverside 4, Louisiana State University 4, Desert Research Institute of Las Vegas 4, and there were 29 other universities that had less than 4 papers each, and 18 universities had 1 paper each. Let's look at the topics covered, and this is based on the keywords of the titles, and the the major topics that soil physicists have studied are the following: water, 46 papers, mechanical properties, 34 papers, aeration, 18 papers, and temperature, 10 papers. Other than the 4 major topics, plants were considered in 16 of the papers, solute transport 15, repellency 14, erosion 10, infiltration 8, pedotransfer function 7, tillage 7, and other topics had less than 6 papers each. All right, now there were methods papers. Time domain reflectometry was the most popular method covered, 23 papers. Heat pulse, 7. Tension infiltrometer, 7. Capacitance probes, 5. Use of infrared spectra, 5. And the other methods topics were less than 4 papers each. Sources of funding. I focused on funding because my father told me when I started out as a scientist to look at the footnotes in papers acknowledging sources of funding. He said I might approach the same sources for my own funding. All right, for the non-USA papers, 51 out of the 186 foreign papers gave no source of funding. The remaining 125 were funded by the government of the author, and the remaining 10 were funded by the European Union, USAID, OECD, and private companies. Now let's look at the USDA papers. The USDA papers, of which are 33, 27 gave no source of funding, and the other 6 acknowledged the USDA as a source of funding. The Pacific Northwest and Oak Ridge papers acknowledge a federal support. All right, university papers, and I want to emphasize that on the papers where sources of funding were given, almost all of them gave multiple sources of funding. 26 papers gave no source of funding, 6 gave private support, 19 cited the USDA, 16 NSF, 8 DOE, 4 NASA, 2 BARD, 2 U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, and then 7 other federal agencies were cited, 1 paper each. All right, let's look at the university papers for state support. 16 papers cited state support other than from the Agricultural Experiment Station. 12 papers cited Agricultural Experiment Station support, and only 2 cited it as sole support. Funding now compared to my father's. Funding at Iowa State University between 1946 and 1982, when he guided 57 PhD students and 32 master's degree students. Yeah, on his publication list, all publications done with his student had an Agricultural Experiment Station project number beside them. He published at least 1 paper with every student, and he had 176 papers with a project number, which means that they were funded by the Agricultural Experiment Station at Iowa State University. In the last 6 years, with 36 issues of Soil Science Society America Journal and 299 papers published in the S1 division, only 2 papers list support from an Agricultural Experiment Station. My conclusion about funding: government and other countries are supporting research. USA scientists who can collaborate with investigators in other countries will have source of funding. Future research: we need more work with plants. Of the 299 papers surveyed, only 16 dealt with plants, and some of them were tangentially, for example, studying plants for erosion control. Only 11 dealt directly with plants. It's important for soil physicists to study on what they do best, basic research based on the laws of physics, chemistry, and biology using mathematical approaches and numerical approaches. However, it's hard to get funding for basic research. Wilford Gardner, my co-major professor, sent me his archives. In them was a talk he gave about irrigation science at Brigham Young University in 1975. He said, "It's interesting that most experiment stations think that we need theorists, but prefer for them to be on someone else's payroll." To get funding, can we link with other fields? Wilford Gardner was a strong advocate of linking soil physics research with ecological research. Can we also link with the medical field? Dr. Gardner died of Parkinson's disease. Everyone knows someone with Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease is linked to exposure to pesticides and heavy metals. Of the 299 papers, 3 dealt with pesticides and 5 dealt with heavy metals. Can we work with doctors and public health officials to tell them how pesticides and heavy metal movement might be limited in the environment? Can we get funding from the National Institutes of Health? Not one of the 299 papers were funded by the National Institutes of Health. And finally, as my father said, I feel honored and humbled that I have been chosen to speak for the workers of Division S1 of our society, and I thank you, and I'm going to turn it over to Frank Casey, who's going to follow up.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Incidentally, with 57 PhD advisors, Don Kirkham is connected to most soil physicists that are at universities nowadays. I think Don Kirkham was my great grand advisor. So if you meet a soil physicist, they probably know the connection to Don Kirkham. I was honored in 1994. I began my graduate degree at Iowa State University with a master's program, and I'll be talking about my training. It's more of a thematic approach for soil physics and how we move into the future. In 94, I started my master's training, and actually Mary Beth's father was still working at the time, well into his 90s, and he published a paper that year. I met him, real gentleman. He came to a couple of my talks that I was practicing, I think for the ASA meetings that I was going to be presenting that year. Anyhow, I felt that my training was very important to speak about today. Don Kirkham has done a tremendous job at Iowa State University in training so many really qualified, excellent PhDs in soil physics, and I think that Bob Horton, my advisor, has really taken the ball and carried on that tradition at Iowa State University. I'll talk a bit about broadening soil physics into different areas where I've received my training. It's a really, I think, an excellent training that you receive from soil physics. And you, if you can, you can approach different areas with that training and broaden out. And the other thing that I wanted to mention, too, was maintaining soil physics training as we move on into the future. So typically in soil physics, you either come from a physics-y math background, and then you're trained into agronomy and soils and the natural systems, or you come from natural resources or soils background, agronomy background, but you all have to go through this, the physics, the chemistry, the math, and it's all traditional, and there's not a whole lot of connections with the natural systems. So as you go through these things, you have to be trained to understand what is actually going on in the natural system and apply those traditional physics, chemistry, math, PChem into the natural systems to understand them. So you also receive training in pedology, physics, management, chemistry in soils, supplemented with geology, hydrogeology, and then a good dose of field and laboratory training. There's also some intangibles, I think, that are very important for soil physicists. Field and laboratory projects, I was exposed to both laboratory in my PhD, and then for my master's program, I had a field project, which I think really complement one another and help you to bridge the scales between benchtop into larger scales. You're also exposed to various analytical methods, instrumentations, which is very important for applying measurements at different scales, broadening those scales, and then moving back down to smaller scales. And then every soil physicist does a bit of tinkering. We always build our instruments. I think this is very important, as well as student cohorts. Iowa State has a really nice system where there always tends to be a lot of students that are around that you learn quite a bit from the different students at Iowa State. Where I have applied my training in soil physics in the last few years is studying bioactive compounds in the environment. The main thing that we've been studying at North Dakota State University is hormones in the environment. We've studied other bioactive compounds. And this is just my perspective of how my soil physics training has allowed me to impart it into different areas of science. I've broadened it out to understand the animal agriculture, the animal systems, the physiology of animals, the waste management, the chemistry, synthesizing radio-labeled hormones, the analytical, high-end analytical equipment that we've been able to use and apply it using soil physical concepts, toxicology and bioavailability, and then bringing it all together. A soil physics presentation wouldn't be complete without a differential equation. Bring it all together, quantifying it together. And then moving those things from various scales, from benchtop to intermediate and larger landscape scales. So as we move into the future, I feel very important that as soil physicists, as Mary Beth has mentioned, everybody wants a theorist on their team, but nobody wants to fund them, that we be able to bridge out to outside disciplines to show our worth as soil physicists. Because we really do take the natural systems and we bridge it with the traditional sciences. But also to make the teaching and the learn and the training relative to students. Soil physicists have bad raps in classrooms. The students don't really enjoy taking soil physics. But if you can make it relative, laboratory-oriented, and interesting, I think the students will really tie into soil physics. And maintain it as a core discipline to make sure that there's PhDs that are available out there for future challenges. Because as we've seen, many of the world challenges that are coming about into the future are involving natural resources, the soils, and we're going to need soil physicists to meet these challenges into the future. So with that, I thank you.